Welcome to the Chrisman Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Chrisman. Topics on today's episode include millennial homeownership, my interview with Blends Nima Gamsari on the future of the mortgage origination process and Blends financial health, and what to look forward to ahead of today's Fed rate decision. Want to power a better lending journey from application to close? Meet Blends Mortgage Suite. Strengthened by features that improve and accelerate across the homeownership journey, including the LO toolkit, hybrid, and fully digital closing capabilities, and upfront quality of life perks like purchase affordability and soft credit pull, hundreds of financial institutions are closing more loans every day despite challenging conditions. Discover how a partnership can help you thrive by visiting blend.com. We all continue to hear conflicting information about home sales and prices in different parts of the nation and at different price points. One thing remains constant. There are over 50 million people ages 28 to 38, and millions don't own homes yet. Sure, some of them don't want to own them, but millions do. There are currently only 562,000 active listings of houses for sale in the U.S. It doesn't take an expert to figure out the supply-demand imbalance that helps home prices. Zonda did a survey of why people decide to buy a home. The top reasons, which every LO should use in conversations, are building my own equity rather than someone else's, marriage or having kids, stability, participating in home price appreciation, and it was cheaper to own than to rent. Recent reports have new home sales rising 9.6% month over month in March, but we're down 3.4% compared to a year ago. The median new home price was $449,800, which was up about 3% compared to a year ago. House prices rose 0.5% month over month and 4% on a year-over-year basis, according to the FHFA House Price Index. And the Case-Shiller Home Price Index reported a 0.2% month over month gain in February and a 2% annual increase. For today's interview, I wanted to welcome to the show Blends Nima Gamsari to talk about the future of the mortgage origination process and Blends financial health. He's the co-founder and chief executive of Blend, in addition to chairing its board of directors. He leads the company's corporate and product strategy towards the vision of a simple, transparent, and accessible financial services ecosystem.
Blend provides modular components and automated workflows for financial services. Can you talk to me about what your vision was in starting the company and running the company and where you hope to continue to go from here?
Yeah, sure. So we were started out of the last financial crisis, Blend was, and you know, we got to see how much there was a lack of technology in the mortgage industry for loan officers, for consumers. And in particular, there was a growing amount of data was being brought into the industry, meaning income data, asset data, better credit data that could be used to power a better process, a more transparent process, one that was a lot less work for all parties involved. And so we started the company in 2012 to help solve that. We really got our first bearings in 2015, and we've been growing since then. We have now over 20% of the market on the Blend mortgage platform, which is sort of our flagship and the thing that we spend the most time on.
You mentioned transparency and efficiency. You're, in a way, redefining origination. Can you explain what that means in your own words?
Yeah, so I think the way that it was done for a long time, and it's still probably done in large part in the industry, and so we still have a lot of work to do and a long way to go, but the way it was done for a long time was consumers would enter into a process with a loan officer. The loan officer would know the products pretty well and say, hey, I want to help you, and here's all the documentation I need. And they would collect ask some questions, and later in the process, they would collect a bunch of documentation. And then internally at the lenders, they would review the documentation and come back to the consumer a few days later, maybe a week later. And then that would be, kind of a typical lending process for a mortgage company to do, and a loan officer to be able to serve their customer. And then what we saw was, in particular, with certain parts of the process, like some of the things that I mentioned, like income verification, asset verification, even, like I said, better credit, things like soft credit, the advent of those things becoming more prominent, it became possible to have a system that was at the fingertips of the loan team and the consumer to automatically provision those data sources, get access to the data, and almost immediately with some certainty tell the consumer, hey, based on your income that we're able to pull and based on your bank balance and how much down payment you may have and based on, you know, what your credit history tells us about you, here's what you're going to need to do to get a loan. And here's, once you do those things, here's what you'll be approved for. Here's how much house you can afford as a result of that. And I'll do all those things, and here's where your rate and monthly payment are going to be. And that was a lot harder 10 years ago. That's a lot more possible today to do in real time. I mean, as you're talking to the consumer, as the consumer is going through the flow, for someone to be able to do that, it's really possible today. And that's what we're building towards, and we've been building towards for a decade.
If I walk into an auto dealership, I can leave that same day with a car and an auto loan. Mortgage industry is obviously a long way from that. But I want to ask you, what does the ideal digital end-to-end mortgage solution look like to you?
Yeah, and I think the auto dealership is an interesting one because it is something where you look at that and you're like, I'm spending $50,000 on a car. Why is that instant? Why is that happening in real time? And for a depreciating asset, usually, I mean, most cars depreciate, whereas a mortgage might take 4 to 6 weeks. And I think part of the reason is actually a good reason, which is before you give somebody $200,000 or $300,000 to fund their home purchase, you want to make sure that they can pay that thing back. Like, it makes a lot of sense to say to someone, hey, before we give you this money, we want to make sure you're good for that money. Because the worst case scenario is we give you the money and you can't pay it back and then we have to foreclose. Nobody wants to go down that path. And so the reason that the mortgage industry is so complex is because there's a lot of checks that go into the system, which I think is actually a good thing. You should check someone's income. And maybe that doesn't always happen in the auto industry. You should check someone's assets to make sure they have enough for the down payment and then some payments thereafter. You should be checking a deep dive into their credit. You should be looking at some of the verifications on the property, the title and the valuation. You should be doing those things. But the problem is for a long time, those things were not digital. And so it was basically impossible to have a digital process to use, what it takes to get to an end-to-end process, digital process. It was not possible to have a digital end-to-end process because the mortgage industry was checking so much, and so many of the things they had to check were manual, were paper, were W-2s, tax returns, pay stubs, bank statements. And as those things have become digital over the last 5-6 years, it's now possible to check most of those things in real time. And also things like home insurance and, like I said, title, those things are now possible to check in real time, at least in some large number of cases. And so it is very important to be able to check those things digitally. And then if we're able to check those things digitally, then the process becomes, obviously get consumer consent to do those things as a loan officer. Once you get those consents, pull that information, and now you have verified third-party information about all the major components that you need to be able to confirm before that loan gets funded. And that means that a lot of that work that was happening downstream in the process, those paper checks that I was just referring to, those things are happening up front. And that's so good for the industry. That means that as a consumer, you get an instant approval. And then as a lender, you have a lot less documentation to work through, which means lower cost. And that's a big benefit of Blend. For lenders, it's lower cost. For consumers, it's a better experience. And in aggregate, it shortens the cycle times. And so I think that's where the ideal digital experience is. You show up, you know instantly what you can afford. You go shopping for a home, or if you're doing a refi, you see where your new monthly payment is. And once you find that home or you're ready to refi with that new monthly payment, you're able to say, I'm ready to move forward, sign the documents, and get ready for the closing process. Like, that's kind of the ideal digital experience. I don't think we're there yet as an industry. We still have a long way to go, but a lot of the strides are being made today.
And it will always be a relationship-based industry to a large degree. So I guess I want to ask you, how do you see technology and the human element dovetailing together as we move into the future?
Well, I think one of the beautiful things about the industry is that it is a relationship-based industry. And that means that as a consumer, you have somebody you can trust on the other side. And that person is figuring out what is the right specific thing for your financial situation. And that financial situation can be a pretty complex, nuanced thing. The part that we want to get rid of or do away with is all the work to just even understand the consumer's financial situation in detail and with full accuracy. That needs to go away. If it takes a week or 2 weeks to truly understand the consumer's financial situation and have it be verified, so you know that you're giving that person good advice, that's not good. That's not good for anybody. If that happens in seconds, and then now suddenly your job is, okay, I got to figure out how to make this puzzle work together. I have to make this puzzle fit together for the consumer and actually give them really good financial advice in a lot of ways. Then that becomes really powerful. And then as somebody who's, you know, working as a loan officer, they're thinking to themselves, how do I, and so instead of spending time figuring out how do I get the right documents and then review the documents to understand what this consumer has, now they're looking at, okay, I have all the information. What's the right solution for the consumer? What monthly payment can they realistically afford? How much down payment should they be putting down? Should they be putting 3% down or should they be putting more down given what they want, what their goals are, their financial goals are? But it really allows that loan officer to truly become a financial advisor, which I think is a big part of the future. The loan officer becoming a financial advisor and not spending a lot of time chasing paperwork, which is not something that is value accretive to anybody, not to the consumer, not to the loan officer. Nobody wants to do it. It's just a necessity of the way the system is set up today.
You mentioned the consumer there a lot. And obviously, in building a robust technology platform, you need to take into account borrower experience. How do you feel like you're prioritizing that over at Blend?
Well, when I talk to really great loan officers, people running, you know, big branches or even whole firms that are working with hundreds or thousands of consumers a month, a lot of those firms or those loan officers are very focused on their customer. They want to get the right solution for all of their customers. And so the best firms, the best mortgage companies are very focused on the consumer. And so it's natural that we should be focused on the consumer as well, especially when most of the value is getting all that information in real time of a platform like Blend, so that you don't have to do manual processing of that information. And so those guys are really keen on that. They're also focused on things like cost as well, because they don't want to have to offer a higher cost product, because if they offer a higher cost product than their competitors, then they're not going to be able to compete. They're not going to be able to get that business. And so what I think is the right approach for the industry is not focused on necessarily any specific persona, the consumer or loan officer, but to get the system to behind the scenes do as much of the work as possible, so that however the consumer wants to engage, and this has been core to us since day one, they want to engage self-serve because they already know the loan officer, they work with them for multiple perk home purchases and refis, they just want to go through the process as quickly as possible, they can. If they want to work entirely because it's their first time they're buying a home, they want to figure out how much to put down, they want to figure out what's the right product for them, because there could be three or four different products that might make sense, then they can work with a loan officer. And as long as the system's doing the work behind the scenes, it actually benefits both parties. It benefits the loan officer and it benefits the consumer and it benefits the lender as a whole, because they can get more automation. And I think this is one of the common misconceptions about Blend. People think of Blend as this consumer experience layer. Really what we're doing is we're this under the hood systematic layer that's taking all the information behind the scenes and then presenting to the right party at the right time. And that's, I think that is the magic. Eventually, and I truly believe this, there won't even really be a consumer experience layer or even that much of a loan officer experience layer, because they'll be able to have all this work happen under the hood and they'll just see the options that are available for that specific situation and be able to keep iterating on those options over time. And so long term, we want to get rid of those experiences so then the consumer becomes just aware of their options, the loan officer becomes a financial advisor, and everyone wins. It becomes a world where both sides get exactly what they need, which is a real-time system that understands the entire situation of the consumer's financial situation and all that's required from a product perspective for their lender.
You threw out the word misconception there, and I want to give you the floor here, because companies are cutting costs left and right in the mortgage industry. It's obviously a tough time. How do you feel like you're properly investing in mortgage tech and your IMB customer base, even in these difficult times?
Yeah, I mean, another one of those misconceptions that I hear is like, hey, Blend doesn't care about IMBs, or Blend doesn't. It's just, I spend so much time. We have so many of the biggest IMBs as customers that we spend so much time with them, and we're constantly thinking about new ways to innovate for them. Like when cost became very important to them, the first thing we did is we went and said, okay, what things can we do to help reduce costs? And so we were one of the first ones to, like, one of the key costs that a lender might have is, you know, pulling all these credit reports for lots of consumers. These are hard credit pulls. This is bad for a lot of reasons. It's bad, obviously, because it's expensive, like I just mentioned, to do a tri-merge hard credit pull. But it's also bad because it hits the credit's consumer or the consumer's credit score. It also alerts competitors. And so the worst thing is you pay for an expensive tri-merge, the consumer gets 20 calls from competitors, what is called in the industry's trigger leads, and then now you lost that business for that you already paid money for. And so that was something we saw in the industry, and we immediately said, okay, there's a better solution here. Other industries use soft credit to verify the history of the credit of the consumer in real time without hitting their credit score, without alerting competitors, and at a dramatically lower cost, like an order of magnitude lower cost for the lender. And we were the first ones to roll out, and that was so important. We were the first ones to roll that out. We're very focused on it. We have so many of our customers using it. IMBs especially benefit from this because it allows them for a 6-month purchase cycle to not have to go into that deep dive, expensive tri-merge and alert competitors during that 6-month process. It's just become so valuable. And so it's one of those things where we're investing so much. We were the first to go live with that. We also built a lot of automation of things like conditions in the process, which, you know, if you're a loan officer and you want to offer a low rate to a consumer, you've got to make sure the process isn't super expensive. And so for your lender. And so automating a lot of the conditions and having the conditions be able to sync back and forth between the underwriting system is another really important piece. We built that into the product from day one. We automate a lot of the conditions in real time as new data comes in. So if you got a credit report that comes in, for example, like we were just talking about, and we noticed that, you know, some sort of delinquency and you need a letter of explanation for that, that's automatic. We pull in the asset data, like I mentioned earlier. If you see asset data come in, we pull in the large deposit LOE automatic, letter of explanation automatically as well. And so that's work that normally has to be done behind the scenes. That just happens in real time by the system. And so it doesn't become a question of how much work do I have to do? It becomes a question of like, what is there left to do? And that lowers cost. And so going back to your misconception, I feel like people think that because we obviously have so many things that we do at Blend now, it's still our bread and butter. It's always been the most of our time on us making sure that our customers can not just survive, but thrive in this tough time. And we're seeing our biggest customers, including and especially the biggest independent mortgage banks, gain a lot of market share in this time. And we're helping them, we're working with them on technology for their LOs, like LO Toolkit, to help them serve their customers better. Things like soft credit, if they're not getting a customer taken by others, the automation that we just mentioned as well. And so all those things lead to, I think, a happy and thriving customer base that we're investing very heavily in.
Well, I certainly want to see you thrive as well. And I guess to put it bluntly, there's been rumblings about Blend's financial health. Can you address that head on? How's your liquidity situation?
Yeah, and again, it's another one where, you know, actually as a public, one thing that's nice about all this is that as a public company, if you wanted to, you can go and look at every aspect of our financials. We have to make it public every quarter. And, you know, I do hear a lot of things that make it seem like we either don't have liquidity or that we don't have enough runway. And I'll say a couple things just to get some facts out there. These are all verifiable. These, you can go look at these in the public domain. And we, as the last quarter earnings, we have earnings coming up here soon, but as of last quarter earnings, we had $350 million in the balance sheet. We have a great customer base that's actually we're growing in market share. We're signing a lot of new customers. We're diversifying as well. And I think sometimes the diversification makes us seem less focus on our IMB customers, going back to the earlier point. We're diversifying to make sure that we can be a stable long-term force in the industry, which I think is good for everyone. We have $225 million in debt on the company that's due in 2026, in the second half of 2026. And we have said publicly that we are going to be cash flow positive well before then, which puts us in a really good position. And so all this stuff is public information. I think one of the downsides is of this industry is that it's so even though it's such a big industry, is that it's so small. And sometimes these rumors, they don't get fact-checked. Like, people don't go and look at the underlying information. All that information is totally public. We share it publicly. I encourage everyone on this podcast to listen to our earnings call. If you want to ask questions on the earnings call, you know, feel free or reach out. And if you ever have a question, our CFO always spends time with customers walking them through our financial situation because it allows them to get real confidence in and who we are and where we're going as a company.
Moving on to economic news. After traders celebrated JP Morgan's takeover of First Republic to open the week, bank-related concerns returned to the forefront with PacWest and Western Alliance, owner of AmeriHome, leading a big sell-off in regional lenders as trading in both triggered multiple volatility halts. If renewed uncertainty over the banking sector wasn't enough to make your stomach churn, Treasury Secretary Yellen said in a letter to Congress that the Treasury Department could exhaust its extraordinary measures by June 1st if there's no deal to extend or suspend the debt limit. Today brings the latest Federal Open Market Committee decision, followed by Chair Powell's press conference. A 25 basis point hike in the Fed funds corridor to 5% to 5.25% is expected, though market participants will look for signs that the tightening cycle is taking a pause. Before the Fed, the MBS market will digest the latest mortgage applications from the MBA, which decreased 1.2% from 1 week earlier. Ahead of Friday's payrolls, we receive ADP employment, which comes on the heels of the labor market showing signs of cooling in March. Later today brings the quarterly refunding announcement, final April S&P Global Services PMI, ISM non-manufacturing PMI, and the aforementioned Fed rate decision and statement. We begin the day with the 10-year yielding 3.41 after closing yesterday at 3.44%, with the 2-year at 3.97%. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. I was watching a daytime talk show when the host claimed people that have sex every day are happier on average. The host went on to ask the audience, by a show of hands, who here has sex at least once a day? A small group of the audience sheepishly raised their hands. The host continued asking, okay, how many of you have sex once a week? This time around, more hands go up from the audience, and the host says, all right, everyone, I'm sure some of you only have sex once a month or less than that. Does anyone have sex once a year? The audience and host are looking around, and way in the back of the room, there's a hand waving about frantically. The host sees this and walks back to interview the man. Sir, for someone only having sex once a year, you seem incredibly happy. Grinning away, the man yells, yes, and today's the day.